The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. It's good to be with you here on the last program of the week, a fast-moving week, moving even faster than usual here at the Edmond campus because of the summer educational program that is now going on. First full day of camp activities or dorm activities yesterday, and we had asked the campers the night before when they were going through all their testing and such, their benchmarks, and listening to the pitch from all the activity heads, we asked them to make sure that they prayed about the weather, because the weather forecast for, well, not just Oklahoma, all across the United States, oppressively hot, dangerously hot. I think it's supposed to be 106 degrees on Saturday, and then it's to stay in the hundreds for the next 7 days. So yesterday was supposed to be about 100, and so imagine how surprised we were. Well, really, it wasn't surprising, though. Coming out of Forum, this was 10:30 in the morning, and the weather was balmy. It was cool and refreshing. We had a nice breeze. We had some cloud cover, and I told my wife, boy, if this were to hold up through the rest of this day, what a miracle that would be. This is not what was in the forecast. And well, a few hours later, we were into the middle part of the afternoon, and I got an email from Stephen Coates here on campus. He's our local weatherman, I guess you could call him. And he emailed me and said, this really has been a miraculous day. This was nowhere to be found in the forecast. Just a beautiful day yesterday. We'll see how it turns out today. It's still somewhat cloudy outside, so cloudy in a good way, and so we'll see. In any event, we're off to a wonderful start. No injuries and no sickness at this camp so far. We're just starting, of course, but that's one of our goals this year. When comparing it to last year, is we just want to try to reduce the level of sickness. There was a spate of sickness in the middle of the camp last year, so we're doing what we can to try to encourage good health and proper eating, proper diet, plenty of sleep, all the things that we need to keep the immune system strong. A few comments from listeners. It says, thanks for this 1 hour spiritual enrichment every day. Here in Nigeria, three of my friends joined in on listening with me today. So that's good news to hear, hear not only from one of you listeners, but knowing that groups are getting together to hear the message. Another one says here, how lucky are you to be together? I wish I was there. Glad you're enjoying sunshine. It's wet and miserable here in the UK. Sorry to hear that, but the weather so far has been really nice. And it is a blessing to be able to dwell together when so many areas on Earth, well, certainly here in the United States, so many group gatherings are still being discouraged. And so it's nice to be able to have a youth camp and to be able to be with God's family. Another comment here says, just imagine how they will dance. This is following the Celtic Throne clip from the other day. Just imagine how they will dance with King David, praising and glorifying God in the world tomorrow. It's really inspiring. And then finally, it says, thanks to you, Mr. Flurry, Mr. Palmer, and Mr. Livingston. Thanks for the daily, and thanks for the solid education that you are educating the students and campers in. And thanks for all the teachers and the staff and the kitchen crew and all the volunteers assisting at SEP. So quite a few people contributing to the camp experience. And, of course, lots of people, lots more than just Richard Palmer and Sam Livingston contributing to this program as well. We've got, I think, four guys in the control room right now. So lots to get to on today's program. Quite a few headlines from yesterday. The two Supreme Court rulings got quite a bit of attention, especially the one ruling that President Trump, at least judging by the initial reporting, he was going to have to turn over his tax returns. But really, I think the media jumped the gun there. They were hopeful that this meant everything would be revealed, but I think what the ruling actually does is it just sends it back to the lower court, and it's going to get bogged down there, which means that none of that will come out before the election. I think we're just about 100 days away from the election campaign or the re-election of President Trump. So the whole goal of this, of course, is to try to take him down. And so you'll see that the media will lose interest in this story very quickly when they know that nothing's going to happen before the election. The other ruling, at first you look at it and say, this is just bizarre. But given the climate that we're in today, it makes perfect sense. And it involves Oklahoma. The Supreme Court says the eastern half of Oklahoma is Native American land. This is a 5-4 ruling. Justice Gorsuch, he joined with the liberals on this court to hold up, I guess, some kind of obscure treaty from 1860 that allowed for, well, it's, I guess, Native American land. And what brought this to the attention of the Supreme Court is there was an individual on this reservation convicted of rape. And the state of Oklahoma prosecuted him. And then the Supreme Court comes in and says, well, you can't do that because that's not your area of jurisdiction. So I guess it's another, in a weird kind of way, it's another autonomous zone. You've got CHOP in Seattle, and now you've got this Native American reservation. Perhaps the two of them will come together with some kind of treaty. Who knows? Who knows? This is from CNBC. It says the Supreme Court on Thursday ruled that a huge swath of Oklahoma is Native American land for certain purposes, siding with a Native American man who had challenged his rape conviction by state authorities. It says the 5-4 decision, with an opinion authored by Justice Gorsuch, endorsed the claim of the Muscogee Nation to the land, which encompasses 3 million acres in eastern Oklahoma, including most of the city of Tulsa. It says the decision means that only federal authorities, no longer state prosecutors, can lodge charges against Native Americans who commit serious alleged crimes on that land, which is home to 1.8 million people. Of those people, 15% or fewer are Native Americans. So there's one law for the 1.whatever million, and then there's another law for the Native Americans, that tiny minority, in the same region. In simpler times, someone that gets convicted of rape, he's just off to prison, case closed. But now look at where we're at. The balkanization of the United States. All of these pockets, all of these double standards. Yesterday, I might pull this clip from further on in my notes, fellows, but this was Mayor de Blasio. Speaking of double standards here, he's explaining to Wolf Blitzer what this ban on large events includes. It's up through September, and then you'll hear Wolf Blitzer. This is clip... this is clip one, actually. But you'll hear Wolf Blitzer say, well, what about protests? What about if people want to gather in large groups to protest? And hear the mayor of New York. Hear his response here. Clip one.
Big outdoor concerts, and it means things like parades. You know, things that here in the city can mean not just thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people. It's just not time for that now.
What about protests? If people want to march down Fifth Avenue, are they going to be allowed to do so?
Look, Wolf, this is always an area of real sensitivity. If you're just talking about health, we would always say, hey, folks, you know, stay home if you can. But we understand at this moment in history, people are talking about the need for historic changes. I mean, today in New York City, you know, recognizing the power and the meaning of the message Black Lives Matter, which we did in front of Trump Tower today. This is a historic moment of change. We have to respect that.
We have to respect the right of people to protest. If they're going out on Fifth Avenue to paint Black Lives Matter on the street, right in front of Trump Tower, now that's important. That we have to allow. But all the other things, as he mentioned there, parades, outdoor concerts, street fairs, that's banned. None of that can go on in New York City. Just the protesting. It's all political. And de Blasio, in this back and forth with Wolf Blitzer, he's just going on and on about how we want to stick it to President Trump. We're painting this on the street right up next to the Trump Tower to make a statement because, well, we've got a racist. We've got a racist in the White House. And so we've got to take action. Now is the time for action. Any other event canceled except for this one. Here's Mayor de Blasio on the painting. The painting of the street, the Fifth Avenue, right in front of Trump Tower, clip two.
Mayor de Blasio, you were on Fifth Avenue. You were painting on the street right in front of Trump Tower, a Black Lives Matter big, big sign. Tell us why you decided to do that right in front of Trump Tower, of all places.
Wolf, it was such an important message. The people of the city believe Black Lives Matter, and we wanted to send that message to our whole city, but to our whole nation. And in fact, here was an opportunity for the President of the United States to show respect for the fact that that's what we value here. And what did he do? He literally tweeted that writing Black Lives Matter on Fifth Avenue would, quote unquote, denigrate the luxury of that avenue. That is pure racism.
That is pure racism, he says. And so we've got to make a statement for the president to say, you know, this is denigrating Fifth Avenue. And then here comes de Blasio. He was part of the painting, actually. He was out there with the public without a mask. I'll show you that clip in just a second. But his statement there, it made me think of, again, I want to keep referring back to this speech from a week ago, but it was perhaps the president's best speech so far, the speech that he gave at Mount Rushmore. But in this particular clip, he's just talking about a nation, the United States of America, that has given so much opportunity to so many Black Americans. Listen to the list. They're not all famous Black people. Some are famous white people. But this is the uniqueness of the United States of America, as he was explaining at Mount Rushmore. This is clip three.
We are the country of Andrew Jackson, Ulysses S. Grant, and Frederick Douglass. We are the land of Wild Bill Hickok and Buffalo Bill Cody. We are the nation that gave rise to the Wright brothers, the Tuskegee Airmen, Harriet Tubman, Clara Barton, Jesse Owens, George Patton, General George Patton, the great Louis Armstrong, Alan Shepard, Elvis Presley, and Muhammad Ali. And only America could have produced them all. No other place.
Only America could have produced them all. What other nation even comes close? How many, I don't have the stats on this, but how many Black Americans, how many millionaires in the Black community are there in the United States? And compared to other nations, I don't know the facts or the figures, but I think what he said there, it rings true, doesn't it? No other nation could have produced this many great individuals. Individuals that overcame all the odds to be a success, at least as the world defines success. This is the United States of America, the land of opportunity, the land that, as I keep saying, the land that millions of people are still dying to get here. even in this age, even in 2020, hundreds of thousands of immigrants trying to get into the United States, and many of them do, of course, every year. Many of them get in legally. There's, of course, some that get in illegally. They're just doing everything that they can to get to the United States. Here's the mayor of New York City is out there painting up the street during a pandemic of all times and proudly declaring that there's a double standard. Yes, if we have to make a statement at this historic moment, we'll then take to the streets. No problem. And he was bragging to Wolf Blitzer. We're defunding the police. We're moving the money in other directions. There was a story on Fox yesterday how that the number of NYPD officers retiring or putting in a request for retirement, it's up 400%. The police, they want out. They want to move on. They want to retire. A 400% increase. That's the New York Post reporting on that. You're not going to see it in the New York Times. You won't see it. You certainly won't hear about it from Mayor de Blasio. So here he is on the streets of New York yesterday. Look at this crowd in this next clip and notice as he's trying to stir up the crowd, as he's trying to stir up resentment against the president of the United States. He's surrounded by people and he's not even wearing a mask. He's not wearing a face mask. This is clip 8.
We are not denigrating anything. We are liberating Fifth Avenue. Yes. We are lifting Fifth Avenue. Yes. We are saying Black Lives Matter in New York City and Black Lives Matter in the United States of America. Let's show Donald Trump what he does not understand. Let's paint it right in front of his building for him.
Let's show Donald Trump what he doesn't understand, something like that. You couldn't hear it very well, but we're going to paint it right in front of his building. It's all about making a statement, a political statement. Don't go to church. Don't go to the beach. If you go anywhere out in public, wear a mask, except for this event right here. There he is, maskless. No mask. The hypocrisy, the double standard, it's all across society, isn't it? What did Lincoln say, quoting Jesus Christ? A house divided cannot stand. How much longer will the United States of America be able to stand? Looking at the division, everything is politicized. Molly Hemingway had a piece at The Federalist, how that America needs to stop reacting to coronavirus like a bunch of hysterics. And of course, it's the media that they're there whipping it up, scaring the public. Infections, so many cases, second wave. This is Molly Hemingway. She says the 1968 Hong Kong flu was also bad, killing about 100,000 Americans when the population was just 60% of what it is now. So just in looking at the population from back in 1968, the flu, the Hong Kong flu. Oh, they called it Hong Kong, by the way, because it came from Hong Kong. But don't dare call it the Wuhan flu. That's racist. The ever-evolving standards. Here it's 1968, 100,000 Americans die. Nothing was shut down. Nothing was locked down. Little bit of history, fairly recent history. And she's just talking about Americans who used to face fears much more courageously. She gives an example. Theodore Roosevelt, he took a bullet from an assassin in the middle of a campaign speech, made sure no one killed his assailant, used his extensive hunting knowledge to ascertain that the bullet hadn't pierced his lung, and finished his speech. He got shot and he finished his speech. This is a president of the United States. Oh, by the way, Mayor de Blasio wants to take his statue down. The one right in front of the National History Museum in New York City, this iconic statue, this monument, Teddy Roosevelt, the statue must come down. Tear it down. Delete it. Cancel it. Molly Hemingway says, Americans put a man on the moon, landed a robot on a postage-sized stamp of land on Mars, harnessed the power of the atom, defeated Germany in a world war, twice invented the automobile, and defeated gravity and invented human flight. Yet right now, many of us are sitting alone in our homes behind cloth masks with dubious protective qualities, thinking about banning children from attending school, even though they are at extremely low risk of infection or as vectors of transmission. She says, we need a steely resolve, not simpering fear. What happened? What happened to America's steely resolve? Well, as we've been noting this week, were it not for President Trump, he's the only one that's standing up to the nonsense. If only he could get support, even from his Republican Party. He has the support of the Republican base, the voters, I mean. But there's a lot of weakness in Washington, D.C., a lot of timidity, a lot of cowardly fear. Not much courage on display. This was President Trump yesterday saying that we need to open our schools. We need to send our children back to school. Clip 4.
But the young and the healthy to safely return to work and to school. We have to open our schools. Open our schools. Stop this nonsense. We open our schools. Germany, Norway, so many countries right now, they're open. The schools are open, and they're doing just fine, and they're opening in the fall. So we have to get our schools open. Denmark, Sweden, we have to get our schools open and stop this political nonsense.
Stop the political nonsense. That's what it is. He knows it's nonsense. There was a study that Richard showed me today about how that prolonged isolation increases your risk of coronavirus. Remember, I played that clip for you yesterday from Dr. Fauci, where back in March he was saying there's going to be a second wave, but we'll be much better prepared, so we don't have to really worry about it. But now, you see, the rioting has died down, so they got to go back to the virus. We got to go back to lockdown. We've got to talk about a lockdown for months, at least long enough to get us through to the election. Anything and everything that can be done to try to destroy the presidency. A new study suggests the lockdown is counterproductive and that isolation actually helps the virus spread. Researchers argue that lockdown causes more stress, loneliness, and negativity, which makes people more vulnerable. Well, there's a bit of common sense for you. Remember, one of the seven laws of radiant health is a positive mental attitude. And then we've talked before about just the benefits of getting outside, getting fresh air, getting vitamin D from the sun. Common sense. There used to be more of it, a lot more of it. Not so today. Everything is done to bury the truth. Lies. Lies. Multiple lies every day, every hour on some of these networks. As they press ahead with their agenda, the president, he was interviewed on Fox News last night, and this is, I think, one of the strongest bits of criticism he's put out there for Dr. Fauci. Fauci was practically the god that ran the country for a few months there. But here is the president last night on Fox News talking about this so-called second wave, clip six.
What do you make of these hot spots, as we call them, in Florida and Texas and other states, and Dr. Fauci's comments?
Well, first of all, the mortality rate, and Dr. Fauci's a nice man, but he's made a lot of mistakes. Like, you don't have to ban them coming in from very infected China. I did it anyway, and we saved hundreds of thousands of lives. I banned Europe from coming in when Italy and when France and Spain were having all the problems, and we saved hundreds of thousands of lives. A lot of people said, don't do it. They've been wrong about a lot of things, including face masks. Maybe they're wrong, maybe not, but a lot of them said, don't wear a mask, don't wear a mask, and now they're saying, wear a mask. So a lot of mistakes were made, a lot of mistakes. Let me just make one statement, though. We do testing like nobody's ever done testing. And when we test, the more you test, the more cases you find. Other countries, you know when they test? And I ask them all. They test when somebody's not feeling well or when somebody walks into a hospital. So they don't have tests. They have tests that are very, very limited. We have these massive 40, 45 million people have been tested. It's a record, and our tests are the best. So we have cases all over the place. Most of those cases immediately get better. They get, you know, people, they're young people, they have sniffles, and 2 days later they're fine and they're not sick to sort of, they're asymptomatic.
That's from last night on Fox News. And it's just truth that you don't hear anywhere else. It's the president of the United States, again, that's having to step forward to the mic and say, here's what's happening. We're testing millions upon millions of people. Of course there's going to be more infections. Of course there's going to be more cases. And most of them are asymptomatic. So look at the bottom line. Look at the mortality rate. Look at the number of deaths. This is a nation of 330 million people. And then the president will jokingly say, maybe we should stop doing all this testing so that there wouldn't be all these cases that the media are continuing to spotlight. That's all they report on with respect to coronavirus. The cases. Cases, cases, cases. And if the president jokes and says, well, maybe we shouldn't do the testing then, well, they'll pounce on him for that. How could you say that? This is from PJ Media. Joe Biden, he's attacking President Trump, saying the crisis in Arizona is the direct result of Donald Trump's failure to lead and his desire to slow the testing down. See, his desire to slow the testing down, that's part of the problem here, says Joe Biden. Well, this is from PJ Media. It says, and it's referring back to the 2009 swine flu and how the Obama administration, and that would include Joe Biden, how that they completely botched that. What was it, like 1,200, 1,300 children died from that flu epidemic. That was early on in the Obama presidency. And how did the Obama presidency respond for mishandling that crisis? This is at PJ Media. It says, why the sudden halting of testing and counting cases? Well, PJ Media points out how the Obama administration stopped testing because they didn't want bad publicity. They didn't want all these cases out there, these known cases. So they just stopped. They just stopped. Why the sudden halting of testing and counting cases? Was the Obama-Biden administration trying to cover up how they botched the response to H1N1? I think that's a very distinct possibility, it says. The Obama-Biden administration failed to take any measures to slow the spread of the virus. Members of Congress, listen to this. Members of Congress called on the Obama-Biden administration to restrict travel with Mexico, where the H1N1 outbreak started, but they refused. Think about this. You had members in Congress telling Obama and Biden, can we at least restrict travel to Mexico? This is where the disease is coming from. And Obama said, no way. President Trump, on the other hand, he restricts travel from China to the United States right away, early on in the crisis, even before it's declared a pandemic. And what did the experts say? Dr. Tedros, Dr. Fauci. They all criticized him strongly. We don't need it. Travel bans don't work. You just heard from President Trump where he said they get it wrong. They've made a lot of mistakes. That's the truth. He's finally saying it. He should have been saying it months ago. But Dr. Fauci is not God. He's made a lot of mistakes. Masks, they're not needed. Now they're essential, except when you're protesting with Black Lives Matter. Then you don't need them. This is the radical left. It says here the theory that travel bans don't work was proved wrong by President Trump after he took the bold step of banning travel from China in January. Despite overwhelming criticism, eventually WHO experts conceded that it worked and it saved lives. It did work. It did save lives. It says here, well, let me just finish this statement. While countries like Italy and Iran were experiencing catastrophic outbreaks, the United States was not. If Trump's decision to close travel with China saved lives, Obama's decision not to close travel with Mexico cost lives. If we're just judging it or evaluating it on the same standard. But this again is something you will never hear. You've got to go to the PJ Media blog to find this. It says Trump has argued that our testing is so much better than other countries that the U.S. appears to have disproportionately more cases than other countries and has made tongue-in-cheek comments about slowing down testing, which the mainstream media pounced on. But the Obama-Biden administration literally stopped testing during the H1N1 pandemic, perhaps to cover up their botched response. And the media, they still praised their efforts. Just heaped praise on Obama. He could do no wrong. And Biden, of course, was right there with him. That's history. That doesn't even go back to 1968. That just goes back to 2009. In fact, there were clips this week of Don Lemon in 2013 delivering a very different message than what we've been hearing in the last few months. It's only 7 years ago, and he was talking about, well, just to give you some context, this was around the Trayvon Martin story, and President Obama, as he often did, he weighed in on the story right away before the facts even came out. And Bill O'Reilly, who was a commentator at Fox News at the time, he came out with a broadcast and basically said, look, the black community needs to step up and accept responsibility for the crime in their own region, in their own neighborhoods, the violence. And so this is Don Lemon responding to what Bill O'Reilly said back in 2013. I think at the time, Lemon just had a show on the weekends at CNN. So that gives you a little bit of context. And then listen to what this commentator on CNN said just 7 years ago. Clip 5.
It's time now for some tough love on the subject. The reason there is so much violence and chaos in the black precincts is the disintegration of the African American family.
He's got a point. In fact, he's got more than a point. Bill?
Raised without much structure, young black men often reject education and gravitate towards the street culture, drugs, hustling, gangs. Nobody forces them to do that. Again, it is a personal decision.
He is right about that, too. But in my estimation, he doesn't go far enough. Because black people, if you really want to fix the problem, here's just 5 things that you should think about doing. Here's 5, pull up your pants. 4 now is the N-word. Now 3, respect where you live. Start small by not dropping trash, littering in your own communities. I've lived in several predominantly white neighborhoods in my life. I rarely, if ever, witness people littering. I live in Harlem. Now, it's an historically black neighborhood. Every single day I see adults and children dropping their trash on the ground when a garbage can is just feet away. Just being honest here. Number two, finish school. You want to break the cycle of poverty? Stop telling kids they're acting white because they go to school or they speak proper English. Over the course of a career, a college grad will make nearly $1 million more than a high school graduate. That's a lot of money. And number one, and probably the most important, just because you can have a baby, it doesn't mean you should, especially without planning for one or getting married first. More than 72% of children in the African American community are born out of wedlock. That means absent fathers. And the studies show that lack of a male role model is an express train right to prison. And the cycle continues. So please, black folks, pay close attention to the hip-hop and rap culture that glorifies everything I just mentioned, thug and reprehensible behavior, a culture that is making a lot of people rich, just not you.
Wow. Pretty strong message. What that was pieced together by the Daily Caller, by the way. There's a 90 seconds of it there, and it was a monologue that went on for 7-8 minutes, I believe. And if he were to give that same message today, well, if a white man gave it today, he'd be accused of being a racist. There's Don Lemon saying the hip-hop culture glorifies violence, uses the N-word repeatedly over and over and over, glorifies the gang culture, glorifies promiscuity, having children out of wedlock, and on it goes. He's talking there about the breakdown of the family. Could it have possibly been true back in 2013 that Don Lemon was siding more with a commentator on Fox News than he was with Barack Obama? And yet you listen to some of these same commentators today. Now that the derangement has set in, they have lost their minds. Don Lemon, by the way, just yesterday, he talked about how that Jesus Christ admitted he wasn't perfect. So why should we, why should we celebrate the founding fathers? They've all got their flaws, including, I guess Jesus Christ has some sins that we didn't know about. That Don Lemon's trying to teach us. His colleague, by the way, Chris Cuomo, I just saw a clip before I got on the air. He said, look, if we dig deep down from within, we can solve some of these problems we're experiencing. We don't need help from above. These are the preachers on CNN. We don't need God. Jesus Christ had his flaws. He had his sins. The ignorance on display every day. I think the thing that's important for us to note here, it's just a basic point to make, I suppose, but it's also just frightening in some ways to see the power of the devil and what he has accomplished in just a few years' time. So many of these commentators today, they're condemned by their own words from just, in some cases, a few months ago. That was a montage from 2013. And there he is saying, look, we need to, if we're going to fix the problems in our community, we need to fix the family and we need to start obeying the laws. We need to start obey. We need to clean up our communities. We need to get rid of the coarse and offensive language. We need to have children within families, not out of wedlock. Just a few years ago, pretty solid message. Pretty solid message. Well, just to finish off here, I guess I need to play the clip, but there's President Trump last week standing up for tradition, standing up for America's heroes, standing up to the mob. There was a good article, by the way, in Real Clear History about how that in war, you better go for an overwhelming victory or else that enemy is going to come back and perhaps come back stronger. This is from Real Clear. It says, a feared enemy must be crushed completely. If one ember is left alight, no matter how dimly it smolders, a fire will eventually break out. More is lost through stopping halfway than through total annihilation. The enemy will recover and seek revenge. Crush him, not only in body, but in spirit. That used to be the strategy for the United States, for Great Britain. Crush the enemy, but see who has the courage to take that approach today. And you can see why, that the temporary America being saved temporarily, you can see why it's just going to be temporary. Look at how hard the radical left continues to fight, whether it's through the Supreme Court, whether it's taking to the streets on Fifth Avenue, defunding the police, the lockdown, the different rules for the lockdown. They are not giving up. They are fighting. They are, as my father has explained, they will do anything. Anything, lawful, unlawful, anything in between, to return to power. When we come back, we'll continue our study. Yesterday, I talked a little bit about a solid spiritual foundation, and I'll continue on with the admonition that Herbert Armstrong gave to many of his students to take the time to actually write down the Bible answer to life's most important questions. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. The Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course is a distance learning program that makes the Bible clear and understandable. The correspondence course enables enrollees to learn what the Bible itself says about subjects that affect you and the world you live in. This fascinating Bible course highlights and proves what the Bible says about morality, war, religion, terrorism, and other current events, focusing on the root causes of this world's many problems facing man, as well as their solutions. The Bible and this course also focuses on the reason mankind was created in the first place, the way to happiness, accomplishment, and fulfillment, as well as the truth behind important doctrinal questions, such as what happens after we die, the nature of God, the resurrection, the millennium, and other critical subjects. Enroll today in the Herbert W. Armstrong Bible Correspondence Course. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily.
One of our employees in Australia, she just forwarded this email. She gets, daily or weekly updates from one of our banks down there, one of the church banks, or one of the banks that the church uses. And it's one of those things that sends out the fact of the day, and usually they're more trivial things. But this was the one that she received recently. It says, in 1833, Britain used 40% of its national budget, the modern equivalent of 17 billion pounds, to buy freedom for all slaves in the empire. It says the loan for the Slavery Abolition Act was so large that it was not paid off until 2015. Well, we didn't have time to fact check that little factoid, but that's some history I'm sure that people aren't interested in today. The sacrifices made to abolish or to get rid of that sin. Richard was telling me he got a book recently about some of the many sacrifices that individuals made, risking their lives even. Ordinary British citizens risking their lives to abolish the slave trade, to actually go on the offensive, to take to the seas, to stop the trafficking of slaves. And of course, if you're an American, you know all about the heavy price that was paid to remove that sin, that stain from our nation. This is history that's not discussed, that's not told. Well, we've been trying to educate our campers, our teenagers, in history, Bible history, history of their own nation. Most of the campers, because of the travel restrictions, they come from the United States. Most of them are Americans. We have a few Canadians as well. But most of them come from this continent. And they're here receiving a godly education. And what a blessing it is. As I was telling them the other day, look at how God educated his end-time apostle, Herbert Armstrong. You can go back and study his conversion in the autobiography. He talks about it, as I said yesterday, talks about it in Mystery of the Ages, the introduction there, about how that he started to write down what he was learning in the 1920s because it helped him to learn more in his study. It helped him to go deeper into his study. And of course, you can look at scriptures in the Bible that talk about how important it is for us to write it down, to write the memorial in a book, in some cases, carve it in stone so that you always see it, so that you can always refer back to it. Write the law on the posts of your house, it says in Deuteronomy 6 and 11. Write it on the gates. Write the vision down, God told his prophets. So that others can study this, so that others can read it. Mr. Armstrong, after his conversion, for many years, he wanted to start a monthly Bible correspondence course so that students of the Bible could learn the way that he learned. Well, he finally got that off and running in the 1950s. And this is from a letter, the introductory letter that was sent to each new student of the Ambassador College Bible Correspondence course. Mr. Armstrong said, "This course is a totally new, different kind of Bible study course designed to lead you by the study of your own Bible to the understanding of the meaning of today's world chaos, of the purpose being worked out here below, of prophecy, of salvation, of this entire treasure house of knowledge, which is God's Word." The truth. So you can look at lesson one of the correspondence course and see the instructions that are given there, how that we're to get our understanding of the Bible from, you know, here a little, there a little, as Isaiah 28 says. You have to put it together like a puzzle. And the first lesson of the correspondence course suggests that you write it out. That you write out the question, and then you write out the Bible response. It says copying all the Bible verses takes a little more time, but it's very helpful in remembering what you have learned and in reviewing your lessons at any time. The point is that it just needs to go deep. It needs to go deep. Mr. Armstrong said this in an old radio program. He said, put the question there in your notebook. Write down the answer. Write down your own comment explaining the answer. And then he says, do you know why we do that? When you write it down, you have really gotten it. You've made it yours and it belongs to you and you won't forget it. That's one of the best ways to remember what you study and what you read in the Bible, one of the best ways to remember it is to write it down. This year at SEP, we've equipped all of our campers and counselors with a notebook, and we've given them a blue pen or a pen with blue ink and a pen with red ink so that they can write down the questions and the responses from the Bible in blue ink and then write down their own thoughts or maybe their own questions in red ink to journal their Bible study, to make it part of them, to work at it. 2 Timothy 2 in verse 15, it says, "Study to show yourself approved unto God, a workman that needs not to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth." Study like a good workman. Study God's word. If you look into that Greek word for study there, it means to make haste and to be diligent about it. Be like the Bereans, Acts 17, verses 10 and 11. Search the scriptures. Bible study is something that enriches our lives. It used to be something that statesmen would do, that commentators, politicians, all of them, educators. Now you get CNN saying, "Look, we don't need help from God. We don't need God's input here. You've got what you need from within." Satan loves that sort of thinking. Human reasoning. Every man doing what seems right in his own eyes. God says, "Study to show yourself approved to God." Try to do that not for men. Do it because God says to do it. Do it because God says it's important. And do it like a good workman, someone who's very diligent, rightly dividing the word of truth. You see, there's a right way to do it, and there's a wrong way to do it. Mr. Armstrong wrote this in his autobiography. He says, "From the beginning of the new spirit-led life, I wrote in article form the thrilling new truths being unfolded in this continuous, almost night and day study." He was so excited when he was brought to the truth of God that he just wrote out all the things that he was learning. He says, "So I continued the study of the Bible. I began to write in article form the things I was learning. I did not then suppose these articles would ever be published. I wrote them for my own satisfaction. It was," listen to this, "it was one way to learn more by the study." You see, this is the way that he would bottom out his subjects. This is how he learned to think more deeply, to think more clearly. This is how he kept his mind focused on the truth of God. This is how he kept his nose in the Bible. In the autobiography again, it says, "I did not write the articles in those days with the intention or expectation of having them published. I had been trained. I had been a trained advertising copy and magazine article writer. It simply came naturally to put into article form these intriguing, fascinating truths for my personal enjoyment and record." See, he knew it benefited him. And then years later, when he comes out with the Bible Correspondence course, he gave those same instructions and admonitions. And look, that's something that you can see in the Bible. As I said, there's scriptures that talk about writing it down. I don't have time to go through Deuteronomy 17, but there's a chapter there talking about how important it is for kings of kingdoms, to write out the law, to write it out word for word. You might think you're too busy to actually get into that kind of detail. You might think you're too busy to actually write out verses that you already kind of know. But if you do it, you'll really and truly benefit from it. It will enrich your life. It will. And if a king in ancient Israel, the king of a kingdom, if he's not too busy to write out the laws of God, then certainly we aren't. We can delve into that correspondence course and enrich our lives in the process. Well, that's all that we have time for on today's program. Unfortunately, you're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send feedback to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us on today's show. Thank you for joining us all week, and we'll see you next week.